You're listening to West High Hero Stories. We're your hosts. I'm Bella Pirtle.
And I'm Lily Kosurik. On today's show, we will be sharing the personal, heroic stories told by West High teens. Our first hero story comes from a ninth grader who is sharing a spooky, spooky ghost tale.
I'm Erica, and this is the spooky, spooky ghost story. It's a working title. A while back, I had this friend, and me and this friend used to do everything together. We were best friends, and one afternoon when we were hanging out after school, probably should have been doing homework, we were just chilling in front of the auditorium, and people come streaming out. Theater practice had just ended. So we overheard these two girls talking. They were walking by. One of them was walking, the other was crutching, I guess. So they were walking by, and I hear them talking about a ghost, and like, I want in. I want to talk about a ghost. So I go up to this girl and I'm like, hey, were you guys talking about ghosts? Like, I don't know why I was whispering. I just thought that was the right thing to do, talking about ghosts. And like, one of them, the one with the broken foot, she's like, yeah, haven't you heard the ghost of Macbeth haunts the auditorium? I can show you guys if you want. Well, of course we wanted to see the ghost. And so, also my friend was obviously terrified, so I knew we had to go. So I'm not really like a firm believer in ghosts myself, but who turns down the opportunity to have a ghost hunt? I mean, that's not a normal person. So we follow this girl into the dark auditorium, and we walk onto the stage, and then she starts telling the story how if you look up at, like, they looked like weird demon cages. I learned later they were ventilation shafts, but we were just looking at them, and she's like, sometimes if you stare hard enough, you can see feet walking by, and we're like, well, we want to see the feet, even though we're terrified and we do not want to see the feet. So we're sitting there looking, and then my friend was like, I think I saw something. Like, that's enough to scare me because I don't want to see something up there. So we're already terrified. We haven't even really done anything yet. We don't even know what's happening. But our tour guide's laughing. Like, this is just the beginning. So she takes us downstairs. Well, there's just this hallway that's barely lit. There's like, I don't know, the lights are flickery, they're old, this is an old hallway, and we're alone down there. It's skinny, I don't know. But so we're standing there, already terrified from the prospect of seeing ghosts. She tells us the story, how how when they were trying to put on the production of Macbeth, things were happening, like props were disappearing, costumes were being like randomly ripped, and so like everyone in theater just like, yeah, there's a ghost, okay. And so it haunts the auditorium. And so she's like, you know, there's a way to summon it. You want to know? And she's like, yeah, we wanted to know, so we could not do that. And so she's like, okay, all you got to do is say the ghost's name three times. You know, Macbeth. And we're like, are you actually Macbeth? I'm like, oh my God, are you Macbeth? And she tried to summon the ghost, and I don't know if it was God messing with us, but the lights flickered, and we were terrified, because she just said she was going to summon a ghost, and she's summoning a ghost, and we start screaming, we're young, we're terrified, there was a ghost somewhere, and my friend starts crying, I'm almost in tears, and in all of this hysteria, our tour guide disappears. She was on crutches. Where could she go? It was a hallway. But she's gone. She had just told us she summoned it. Maybe she was the ghost. But she's gone. Me and my friend are terrified under the hallway. And we're like, we have to get out of here. So I take my sobbing friend. I lead her up the stairs and out of the auditorium. And there we are, back where we started, but nowhere near the same people, because we just witnessed the ghost. And we didn't even see him, but we felt it. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica Santea, for that story.
Our next hero story comes from Lily Kosurik, a ninth grader from Mr. Mackey's third hour English class. She will be sharing a story about overcoming fears.
My name's Lily, if you all didn't know, but okay. A few years ago, when I was in seventh grade, I faced my biggest fear of all time, which I ironically faced in a church with painfully outdated 90s carpet. The day started like any other, with my friends and I making an ungodly ruckus until the school bell rang and we were forced to take a seat and do vocal warm-ups. My choir teacher finished playing the piano and gathered us up together and handed us each a permission slip with the title Solo Ensemble. My heart dropped when I saw those words. But you see, I'm a huge wuss when it comes to anything to do with performing publicly. Don't get me wrong, I think performing is fun, and I will sing at the top of my lungs in the shower, well, until my parents tell me to shut up. But throw in a few people, and I freeze. Anyway, the competition wasn't necessary, but it basically made up 30% of our grade, and I refused to have a C in any class. We had to memorize a song from a list of about 100 pieces. I picked Homeward Bound by Marta Keene, and we had 3 weeks to learn it. I had a personal voice teacher at the time, named Mrs. Keene, who helped me rehearse, and my parents attempted to do the same. Which really helped me, and it made me feel like I could actually do it. The 3 weeks went by very fast, and the fateful day seemed to come out of nowhere. About half the students in my choir class, which was only about six because I went to a small school, and we all got up and we all drove down to the church, and we gathered in this basement kind of area under the church, but it really wasn't a basement. It was more like a big vaulted ceiling room that was kind of half underground, half not. And so as we were going down these big concrete type stairs, like, the room was filled with all these kids toting around anything from tubas to huge cellos, and the hodgepodge of noise was just crazy. It was like a screaming match in there. We practiced a couple of rounds and warm-ups before heading back up the tiny gray staircase, past the main part of the church, into the narrow hallway that had two small rooms on the left side. We had to sit on the floor as we waited to be called into one of the rooms, and it was highly uncomfortable to sit on the scratchy floor in a dress for 2 hours while stressing about the lyrics to my piece. I waited and waited for my teachers to call out my name and tell me it was literally time to face the music. My teacher finally poked his head out of the small white room and smiled as he called my name. I walked quietly, praying to the music gods would let me through with minimal embarrassment. The little white door closed, but seemed more like a permanent stone wall trapping me inside a cold prison. I positioned myself in the center of the room, looking at the two judges. They were both relatively tall men. One was thin and had little Coke bottle glasses and had a glimmering bald head. The other was a bigger guy with thick eyebrows and a beard. And they were both silhouetted by the sun in the window behind them, which was probably the only reason that they seemed scary. Abruptly, my teacher began playing, throwing me off, I might add. And I started singing, sounding like there was an earthquake under me, until the moment right before I had to sing the loudest, highest note. In my head, I'm telling myself, Lily, you can do this. Sure, you're an alto and you're singing a soprano song with basically a whistle pitch in every two lines, but you'll be fine. But just as I finished my mental pep talk, I tried hitting the note, but my voice decided it was time to sound like a 13-year-old boy hitting puberty with an audible crack. I freaked out and paused, but my music teacher just kept playing, so I just kept singing, hoping that by some will of God, they didn't hear that ugly banshee scream I just made. I finished the song and they clapped lightheartedly, gave me a few comments and not being so nervous and just relaxing, which I feel like they were just pitying me. I was relieved to be finished, but scared to see my results. It actually all ended up really awesome in the end because I ended up getting the highest score possible by the judges, which was a 1 on a scale of 5 to 1, but 1 being the highest and 5 being the lowest. And my teacher told me that those judges were supposedly like the toughest judges that were there. Like, they were actually like professional singers, so yeah. And so by that, I learned to be confident in my abilities and just to relax and not be a complete wacko when facing new challenges because they just might turn out to be awesome in the end.
That was Lily Kosarek.
Our next story comes from Chloe Larson, also from Mr. Mackey's third hour English class. Her story is about the time she decided to help the less fortunate.
Sunday, March 18th, 2017, 1:23 p.m. I was sitting in church, kind of had dozed off. Not to be rude, but to try to put it lightly, let's just say my Sunday school teacher does not have the funnest and best teaching skills, and I was not born with a very long attention span. But I guess I should be thankful for that because if I had been paying attention, I wouldn't have come up with this and I wouldn't be telling this story. Anyways, as I'm sitting there tapping my feet while my mind was jumping around, millions of thoughts entering and leaving my head in a matter of seconds, I came across an idea that would change my life forever. Well, not exactly forever, but it sounds way more interesting to put it that way, so I'm just gonna go with it. My thoughts began to get more serious, and I started thinking about all the wonderful people in the world who are not as lucky as I am. For example, the homeless people, which are so many in Anchorage. I came to the conclusion that it was not right to sit around knowing I had the resources to help them but not do anything about it. After I had the idea to help the homeless, I had to construct my plan on how. I decided I would do that later and tune back into the lesson, which ironically was on service. I got home later that day and texted my friend Afton, telling her my idea, asking if she wanted to help. Obviously, no one can really say no to that, so she agreed to help, and we started our planning the next week. That weekend, we made a grocery list and then stopped by the store to pick everything up. This list included bottled water, protein bars, granola bars, fruit snacks, applesauce, goldfish, Capri Suns, and cards with positive constructive messages. Then we began the most adventurous and longest part of the story, handing out the 72-hour kits. On this part of the journey, we traveled all around Anchorage, starting on Northern Lights and heading all the way over to Muldoon. This took about 4 hours driving all around, searching for more people to try and serve. Just like how Odysseus met many different and new people on his journey, one of the challenges, but also pros of my adventure, was discovering many new, different types of people. Some of the people I encountered did not appreciate this act of service, and they wanted more, but different. One group of people on Spinard that I encountered only cared for cigarettes and alcohol. They began to take more than 2 bags each, and as we drove away, one of the men began to chase our car angrily because we did not provide him with the materials he wanted. This was a bit of a scare for me, not knowing what would happen next. Later that day, we drove back around and saw him eating alone with around 7 bags that I assumed he had stolen from the others in a group. Everyone else, which was about 5, were sharing only 2 bags across the street. This angered me, but then also warmed my heart that we were able to put that aside, that they were able to put that aside and share what they were able to keep. On the other hand, we met another group of homeless people over by Walmart on Benson who were probably some of the coolest, nicest people I've ever ran into. They were so grateful for this and kept referring to us as angels and giving us so many compliments. To them, we were the coolest people ever, a hero and a blessing from God. This event impacted my life greatly, and I was able to see the world from other people's perspectives and come to know how each and every person has so much unique individual worth. This might not be the most heroic service a person has the opportunity to do, but to at least one of the 80 people we handed out food to, I would like to think I was a hero.
Thanks, Chloe, for that wonderful story.
Our next story is told by Abdul from Mr. Mackey's 4th-hour English class. His story is about his nerve-wracking experience in the Kenai Peninsula.
One summer, I was down in Kenai Peninsula at a sleepaway camp, and it was in the middle of the week. It was only like a one-week thing, and every day our group like voted on what we wanted to do, and so we went like canoeing, we went kayaking, and then one day my group voted to go on a hike, and so the counselors took us to a path that went up in between two mountains that were like overlooking the camp, and we hiked for like an hour and a half, and then we came to a spot where the path like widened up, and we rested there for like 10 minutes, and then we were going to turn back and go back for lunch, and then when we started to go back, I noticed that there was like a dark lump in the tall grass, and so I went over like not knowing what it was, and I saw it was a backpack, and I read the name, and it was a kid who had asked to go to the bathroom, and so I went into the woods like 50 yards or so, and I found like footprints going to a tree, and there was some gross stuff by the tree, and there was no kids around though, so I went back, and I didn't know which way they had went, and they were just gone, and so I just, like, played eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and then I just went that way. I went right, and they had gone left, but I didn't know that. And then I ran for, like, 5 minutes, and I should have known that I was running, and I didn't run into them, that I should have gone the other way. But I ran into, like, a giant sign that said, "Watch out for bears," and it scared me. That was the reminder I needed. So I turned around and I went the other way until I came back to the clearing, and then I went the way they had gone, and I came to like this fork in the road that I hadn't noticed coming. There was like 2 ways, and it's something you don't notice when you're going one way, but it's all you notice when you go the other way. And so I went left, I think. I forget. But anyways, and I was going for a couple minutes when there was like another sign that said "Watch out for bears," and I saw, like, bear tracks leading up to it, and then there was, like, a bear by the sign, and so I, like, dove for the tree line, and when I looked back up, it was just gone, and I don't know if it was, like, I was hallucinating or if there was one and it just left, but I just kept backing up until I noticed that I was, like, on a different trail, and I assumed it was the other one from the Y, and I just kept going until I eventually saw, like, a beach. I had finally found my Ithaca, kind of, and then I went onto the beach, and I didn't know how to get back to camp from there, though, and so then I heard, like, rustling in the bushes, and I thought, oh, this is the bear, and so I, like, backed kind of into the water, and kind of got under a little bit, hoping it wouldn't see me, but then, like, a red kickball kind of came out, and I went up, and I saw on it, it said, like, Camp K, and so I just went through the bushes, and there was the camp, and my campmates were happy to see me, except for that kid whose backpack was, like, soaking wet. And then for, like, the rest of the week, I just sat out every hike. I didn't want to go on it, yes.
That was Abdul, and you're listening to West High Hero Stories.
Our next story is brought to you by Anna Mercedes from Ms. Tinker's second hour English class. She will be telling you about her first time trying out for volleyball.
In the middle of my fourth grade year, my mom moved us for, like, the 17th time in all of my 10 years. From as far as Wasilla and as close as Eagle River, I moved from Eagle River Elementary to North Star Elementary to Lakehood all in the same year. In the middle of January, in the middle of fourth grade, I got a flyer. The flyer had some information about the Lakehood volleyball team, and of course I wanted to join. I wanted to make new friends. I decided to talk to the coach about what equipment I needed for tryouts and when and where tryouts were and when the first practice was. I was nervous. Later that day, I told my mom, who was very thoughtful, about the flyer. I told her I wanted to join, and also I was a little nervous. She said it was a great idea and that I'd be a great player. I didn't believe her, though. I was a stubborn little 10-year-old. She told me not to be nervous because I was an awesome player already. Although what she said made me feel better, I was still a little nervous. And I still needed to talk to the coach. I had so many questions. After all, I've never been on a school team before. The next day, I waited after school to talk to the coach. I was sitting in the front of the gym door in the scariest part of the school, with the terrible kindergarten snowman and some holiday decorations the janitors forgot to take down, and the creepy life-size drawings of all the teachers. They were all colored by the second graders, so most of them had purple hair and blue skin. For about 10 more minutes, I sat there staring at their orange eyes and their green noses and thought about what my mom said. She told me not to be nervous, and maybe she was right. I finally stood up and walked into the gym. I knocked on his office door, and he greeted me. I asked the first question. Then it led to another, then another, then another. After my, like, 299th question, I finally asked when tryouts were for volleyball. He told me they were next Friday, and that I should try out for the team. As soon as we were done talking, I ran outside into the bitter cold of Alaska and ran home. The door flung open and I was screaming for my mom. I had to train. After all, tryouts were only in a week. I found her in the sparkling clean kitchen, making me and my siblings sandwiches. I asked her restlessly where the dumbbells were and where the kale and broccoli and Brussels sprouts, you know, all the healthy stuff was. She told me to calm down and to talk slower. I told her I needed to work out and I needed to eat protein, whatever that is. After I was done talking, she got me water and broccoli and 2-pound weight, even though I asked for a 5-pound weight. She moved the living room around and told me to practice out there. I did a couple jumping jacks and 2 push-ups. Yeah, I did 2 push-ups. I had muscles. I continued to work out until Thursday and decided I needed to rest. I was as tired as Odysseus after his 20-year journey. Then Friday came. The 3:30 bell rang, and I ran into the bathroom and changed into my volleyball clothing and waited in the gym with my friends. I was scared that I wasn't going to make the team. Coach Bavolo came into the gym and blew a whistle. He lined us up in two lines facing each other on opposite sides of the net and gave me a volleyball. We bumped and set the ball back and forth, then ran back and forth from the wall to the net, and we took a three-minute break. We rushed outside for water. When we came back, Coach Pavola told us that the team would be posted on Monday. I was very scared. But on Monday, I found out I made the team. I felt so proud and confident. I couldn't wait to tell my mom and thank her for helping me. After all, she told me I could do it, and she was right. And Mom, my hero's journey was no Odysseus's journey. I still had challenges, and I conquered them. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna.
The next story is coming at you from Alona, also from Miss Tinker's second hour English class. She tells us about her daring journey to America.
When I sat on the airplane heading towards America, I knew my life was going to change in the way I always wanted them to. Coming from a small country in Europe, I was really excited about going to the place I'd always dreamed of. But I was also frightened of the idea of being so far away from my family and friends. When I arrived, I walked around like a lost baby. I was surrounded by unfamiliar land and weather, especially the weather. I walked around from place to place and moved along with my day, just wanting to go back home. Moving from to a place that was so different from the one I came from was a challenge. As a new student, I felt as if I was invisible in the classroom. I couldn't speak a word of English and was looked down by the other students. I could remember times when the teacher would ask who doesn't have a partner and I would be the only one to raise my hand. Most days, I would go to school and not speak a word to anyone. But one person that took a special interest in me was my gym teacher, Mr. Jones. He always encouraged me to participate in sports and other things because he saw my potential. He particularly wanted me to try basketball, which I immediately took an interest in. After 4 years in Alaska, I became more comfortable and started to challenge myself to do more. I decided to join the school spelling bee. This was my absolute worst fear. I couldn't imagine standing in front of a crowd of people trying to spell English words. Thankfully, with my family's support and with what felt like years of practice, I felt like I was ready. During the spelling bee, I was very nervous. I could feel my heart pounding out of my chest. When they called my name, I immediately got up and began walking towards the podium. I quietly spelled the word I was given, and to my luck, I actually got it right. The nerves began to calm down, and before I knew it, the competition was over, and I finished in fifth place. This was a complete surprise. The shock on my face was nothing compared to my parents. They completely lost it. They were even more excited than the parents of the actual winner. Soon after that day, I became more encouraged to try new things. I started conversations with different people, made some great friends, and actually wanted to be in school. I found new passions like basketball and reading books that became my safe haven throughout the years. The strong bonds I formed with friends and teachers in school were ones that I still carry with me now. You know, thinking about it now, I never asked my parents why we came to America. Although no one spoke about it openly back home, everyone knew that the U.S. was a land of opportunity. I know my parents had to give up a lot for my future. Moving to a new house is challenging, but to a new country, I mean, that's something else entirely. At that point, I realized the impact that move had on my life, in a good way. And I just want to thank my parents for their determination and persistence to follow the American dream. And I hope to do the same. Thank you.
That was Alona, and you're listening to West High Hero Stories.
This next story will be told by Eva Lou Blanchett from Miss Tinker's second hour English class. Her story is about the time she spent in Europe.
So my hero's journey is about a year that I spent in Europe. So I finished fourth grade at Polaris K-12 school, and at the end of the year, my mom told me that me and my sister were going to move to Europe, to Copenhagen, Denmark, for at least a year. And I was going to have to hit the restart button on my life and start over at a completely new place. Even though I'd been there before, I'd never really thought that I would, like, actually live there and start over. So it was, like, quite a shock. And I went to school at Oosterpol International School, and I only knew one person, which was my cousin, and she was kind of like my guardian, you could say, to adjusting to the lifestyle there. And she helped me like make new friends and kind of see how it was to live in a bigger city like Copenhagen. So being there, since it was so big and it was actually pretty safe, I experienced a lot of freedom, and my parents gave me my first phone that year, and I was like 10 or 11. And because I had it, I got to travel like throughout the city alone, which was really cool. And I could just like go with some friends to their house and take the train or the metro. And that gave me a lot of independence, which really helped me like grow as a person and become more of myself, if that makes sense. So after I sort of adjusted to the Danish lifestyle, the only thing that was really holding me back was my school. It was really challenging since it followed the international baccalaureate curriculum. I was learning like basically high school algebra in fifth grade, and I was having to write like 5-page research papers on civil rights and the theory of evolution. And sometimes I felt like I was trapped on an island of my own challenges, and I really wanted to overcome it, but it was super hard. And so with the help from my teacher and my mom, I learned to overcome my fears and challenges, and they really helped me progress not only like through my school life, but as a person. And having such a challenging education really shaped me as a student and taught me to value school, learning, and persisting through life's hardships. And with the freedom that was given to me in the city, I learned how to be independent and to travel safely, and it really gave me more like street smarts, you could say. And once like the school year was over, it was time to go back to the ordinary world, and I had to go back to Alaska. And once I got back to Anchorage, I really saw like the city in a new way, and I would look at the mountains and see something more beautiful than I saw when I first left. And it really made me miss what I'd had before, like how beautiful it was being in Anchorage and like my childhood. And it also made me miss my second home, Denmark. And it was really eye-opening to see how great change can be, even though it's really scary at times. And moving to Denmark really taught me to accept and embrace change. And it was a stepping stone for my personal journey in becoming a better, stronger person. Thank you.
Thanks, Evalu. Our next story is from Piper Hancock. Her story is about the way she found her passion in baking.
Cooking and food has always been a big part of my family. Whenever we travel, we look for the best food in the area, and we always talk about ways we could improve it. My dad is one of the three owners of a restaurant, so he's always looking for new ideas and inspiration for food. Our family would never be found at McDonald's or Burger King. We always need to find some other restaurant to eat at. My dad was definitely one of the reasons my interest in cooking got started. He knew so much about flavors and how they work together. All I wanted to do was understand and be able to talk with him about food. I started baking and trying to understand how everything went hand in hand. I also really love sugar, and my mom would refuse to buy me sweets, so I resorted to making them myself. I threw out burnt cookies, deflated cakes, and rock-hard bread, but eventually things started coming out okay. I knew I had made something not awful, and my sister couldn't immediately throw an insult my way. When my dad started complimenting my cooking, I felt so accomplished, so I started baking even more. I got really into it and started baking every day after school and in all my free time. My friends and family really loved it. I slowly started gathering recipes and separating the ones that worked from the ones that didn't until I had a drawer full of papers and recipes that I have to this day. Although savory cooking really interested me, baking was a safer middle ground. Savory cooking involved planning and going to the store to get exotic ingredients, while baking was so simple and everything was at my house, easy to get. Eventually, my focus was baking, and I kind of forgot about the other half of cooking that I really enjoyed. It was also more acceptable for me to be a baker because, of course, the little girl likes to bake. And if I said that I was interested in cooking, that made things more real and serious. Over the summer, I asked my dad for a job at his restaurant, but because our summers are so busy, he never got around to asking. I didn't bake much over the summer because I was doing so much, and baking didn't motivate me enough to get me into the kitchen in my free time. I slowly started losing interest and stopped cooking, but one day I came home and my dad said he had gotten me a job. My heart stopped. This was actually happening. I couldn't believe it. I was so excited. I didn't know what to do, so I immediately started baking at home again to get back in the swing of things. I started working immediately and was shocked by all the differences. I was so used to working in the comfort of my house that all of a sudden being thrown into a bright, rough environment was very shocking. I wasn't allowed to lick the spatula or make recipes that I wanted. I was really quiet in the beginning because I was so scared and not used to the space I was in, but slowly I got to know all the people and gained their respect past the owner's daughter. As I slowly got used to the people in the workspace, they got used to me, and work started being something I looked forward into my week, not a chore. As I started becoming better, my parents wanted to send me to camps to further extend my knowledge, but that's not how the first one went. The first camp they sent me to was a camp for beginner chefs, and boy was I in for a loop. While some kids found the material that they were teaching in this camp interesting, learning how to turn on a stove was not exactly the step that was going to take me to the next level. So that summer, my parents decided they would ship me off to Oregon and Boston for two very interesting camps. The first one in Oregon was about cooking over fire and using the materials around you, which out there consisted of dandelions and hemp milk. I remember sitting in a field for hours picking dandelion leaves for a saute no one wanted to eat in the end. While the camp in Boston made you wear chef's jackets and hats and everything had to be sanitized properly, this was what I was more used to. I came back from these camps with new knowledge I didn't know I had gotten. Even my boss could tell the differences in knowledge I had in the kitchen. I can relate this to the Odyssey when Odysseus gets all the information from Tiresias but doesn't know what to do with it and has to figure out the best way to go about sharing it. I just gained all this knowledge and didn't know what to do with it, and I kept it to myself until I knew where I could use it.
That was Piper, and you're listening to West High Hero Stories.
Up next is Mackenzie Hawkins from Mr. Mackey's first hour English class. She shares her story about competing in gymnastics regionals.
All right. My name's Mackenzie Hawkins, and my story is regionals. So, last season, I became a level 7, and I was so excited, a level 7 in gymnastics, that is. And I was so excited, but I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to go to regionals, and that was a competition of 6 states, which is region 2, like Seattle and Hawaii and Montana. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go for it. So all that season, I worked really hard. And finally, the day came for state. And state was pretty good. I had a fall on beam, and I was like, darn it. Now I'm not going to go to regionals. What the heck is this? And then out of the blue, I was like, yes. Oh, my gosh. My name was called, and I was first place, Mackenzie Hawkins. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Thank you, God, for letting me be able to go to regionals. So then I was like, okay, now this is real. I'm going to train. So that whole 2 weeks before regionals, I was training really hard in the gym. And the day before we left for Boise, Idaho, I had a terrible practice. I was falling all over the place, and I was like, no, this is not happening. This isn't happening. And my teammate Taylor came up to me, and she was like, hey, Mackenzie, chill, man. And then she was like, you know what? You're just getting all the bad stuff out before regionals. I was like, yeah, that's right. And then finally, we took off on the plane, and we landed in Boise, Idaho, and before long, there we are, on the floor, getting ready to compete, and all of us really, really nervous, and all my coaches were around me, and they're like, okay, guys, you've trained hard for this. You deserve this. Get out there, focus, be confident. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. It's time, you know? So 3, 2, 1, we count down, and boom, we're off warming up, doing our little running thing, and getting warmed up, and we're like, yeah, let's do this. Let's go. And we get to our first event, which is bars. And I guess I should tell you, I'm terrible at bars. It's my weakest event. And I was like, you know what? Challenge number one. Let's get through this. So I did my warm-up, and it went well. Nothing really crazy. I didn't fall. I was just thinking about making one more routine. And so then before long, I was standing in front of the judges, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so scared. And then they're like, Mackenzie Hawkins? And I was like, yeah, that's me. I guess that's me or something. And then I was like, all right, just focus in. I jumped to the bar, and then before long, my feet hit the mat, and I stuck. And I was like, oh my gosh, success. Let's go. And then we walk over to the dreaded beam. That is like a gymnast's worst fear, is beam. And more specifically, it's your series, because everybody falls on it, and that makes or breaks your goal. And I was like, no, I am not falling on this. I have come too far. And then, you know, we are all warming up, and of course, my coach comes up to me and she's like, hey, Mackenzie, want to go first? And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll go first. And so then I was like, you know what? It's okay. I'm just going to go out there and set the tone. I was under so much pressure because I wanted to make sure my teammates could go off of what I did, but more specifically, I wanted to make sure my meet went well. So then again, I was standing in front of the judges. I was so nervous. I could feel my stomach and my throat. My hands were getting sweaty, and I was like, this is not good. And then they're like, Mackenzie Hawkins. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's me again. And then I got up, and I was doing my mount and all this stuff. And finally, I got up to my series, and I was like, why am I waiting here? Why am I waiting? And I was like, just go. Come on. And then I felt the presence and the beady eyes of the judges just staring at me, and I was like, don't focus on that. And then I felt the presence of my teammates looking at me, hopefully, and I was like, it's okay. I just have to go. So then I went hands, feet, stick, and I made it. I didn't fall off the beam, and I was like, yeah! So the rest of the team was so excited for me, and the rest of the routine was so easy for me, and I was like, you know what? I got this, yeah. And then I stuck it, and I was like, I'm done with beam. I'm done with beam. And I was so excited and happy. So I went to floor, and floor was so easy because I was like, there's no way I can fall on this. I'm on a piece of floor. Like, I can't fall. So I ended up scoring, like, the highest floor score, and I was so happy about that. Then I went over to vault, and I was like, I'm just going to go run over there and do my thing. So I did, and I stuck it, and I was like, oh, my gosh, my meet is over. I'm so happy. And then before long, I was sitting at the awards ceremony, and, like, name after name was being called, and I was like, so did I not place, or, like, what's going on? And then I was like, oh, wait, that's my name, Mackenzie Hawkins, first place with a 37.075, and it turns out I won by 0.025, which is like a quarter of a toe point in gymnastics. It's like the littlest tiny thing, and I won, and I was like, what just happened? I won my age group out of 6 different states in level 7. I couldn't believe it. I was having trouble at the beginning of the season, and now look at me. Like, this meet gave me confidence and like the determination to reach my goal. And I felt just as accomplished as Odysseus did when he won back his kingdom and his wife. But I will never forget the time when I exited the terminal and I just saw the faces of my parents. Like, the trophy was cool and all, but my parents were like, oh my gosh, and I was like, oh my gosh, and it was really cool, and I'll never forget it.
Thanks for that interesting story, Mackenzie.
Our final storyteller is Noon. Hers is a story about taking risks and facing the consequences of your actions.
Hi, my name's Noon, and I'll be reading The Hidden Veil. The morning air was filled with beautiful colors, the pinkish-colored clouds and the sun just rising above the horizon. I took a deep breath, and plenty of questions raced through my head. Was it worth it? What would I even get out of this? Is this betraying my religion? When my parents find out, what would they say? Just one day, I told myself, one day, to be someone who is not a terrorist. One day, to not be a Middle Eastern Arab. Just one day, to be like everyone else. I reached for my hijab, the headscarf, and hesitated for a moment. Then I pulled it off. It felt strange not wearing the hijab in a place other than home. I undid my bun and put my hair back in a ponytail, then hid the hijab in my backpack and walked nervously towards the bus. Arriving at school, I scanned the halls while walking to my first class, making sure I knew none of them, who were in my old school. I walked in and sat down at an empty table of 4. Just then, a group of girls walked in, cheerful and happy. Their presence filled the air. Is anyone sitting here? One of them asked. No, I answered. They sat down and got their binders out, ready to start a new era on the first day of middle school, just like me. Hi. I'm Marlandia, one of them said. I'm Catherine, another said. Natalie, the last one said. They introduced themselves, and I smiled, puzzled that someone was actually speaking to me. While walking back home from the bus that day, I crossed the same exact spot where I took off my hijab before school. I stopped and stared at the spot for a moment. Should I just walk in my house without it? What would my mom say? I didn't know the answer to that question, and I guess I didn't want to find out either. So I wrapped my hair back in a bun and got the lonely and abandoned hijab out of my backpack and wrapped it around my head. Growing up and coming here from the Middle East, the hijab has always been there. There was no exact rules about it. It was just the hijab. The headscarf woman wore during the 5 daily prayers, and the headscarf woman also wore when they left the house. When I got home, I greeted my mom, and then went straight to my room and got out the Quran, the holy book of Islam, and flipped through it until I got to the part where it talks about women revealing themselves. I was expecting to see a whole page that talks about this, but to my surprise, there was only one verse that says that women were to reveal themselves during the five daily prayers. But my question to whether I was committing a sin or not remained unanswered. Assuming that I wasn't committing a sin, I continued taking off the hijab and putting it back on before coming home. I would constantly ask myself why I was hiding this if I wasn't committing a sin. Throughout the school year, me, Marlandia, Catherine, and Natalie became really close friends. We had most of our classes together and saw each other all day. I wanted to tell them about the hijab because I felt as if I was lying to them, as if I was hiding something. My personality, maybe? I didn't know for sure. I thought many times about what I should do. I couldn't just walk in my house one day without wearing the hijab, and I couldn't just walk in the school one day with the hijab. Everybody knew who I was now, so I continued hiding something from both sides. Half the school year has gone by, and I continued the same routine as I had done on the first day. There was a ton of school drama happening at that time, and one of my friends would constantly argue with this other girl because she said she would talk about her behind her back. But one day, the arguing got so intense that it turned physical. All four of us just jumped on her and her friends, like Odysseus and his men, jumping on the Cyclops. I didn't know why I joined then, but when one person went down, everyone just sort of jumped in. We were all taken to the office, and our parents were telephoned, and were on their way to pick us up. I gripped the end of my chair and scanned the room. My friends were there, and the girls we had fought were also there, exchanging each other nasty looks. If there wasn't a teacher in the room, another fight would have broken out. I eyed my backpack that was sitting on the floor near my feet. I knew my dad would be on his way to pick me up. I debated about what I should do. I had two options. I could either sit there and wait for my dad to come in the office and see me without the hijab, or I could take the hijab out of my backpack and wrap it around my head in front of everyone. I decided to go with option one. I waited and waited, unable to move. The minutes ticked by like hours. I knew my dad would give me a huge lecture, but that wasn't what I was concerned about. I wanted to know what my dad would say about me taking off the hijab. I watched two of the girls leave with their parents, knowing that my dad would be here any minute. After about a minute or so, my dad walked in. He looked at me, then at the principal. He spoke with the principal for a minute, then we left. On the way home, I was surprised my dad didn't look at me rudely or question me about my hijab, although he did ask me why I was getting in trouble at the school and gave me a lecture. After coming home, I went straight to my room, for I knew I was grounded. I did my homework, read books, and thought many times about why my parents haven't said anything about the hijab. The day before returning back to school, I asked my mom this, and she said she knew it was hard wearing the hijab in America, and that if I didn't want to wear it, I didn't have to, for I was old enough to decide. She looked disappointed. I wanted to be like my mom's sisters. I envied them and how they always had the courage to wear the hijab no matter what, but I was too scared to show up to school with the hijab, so I continued not wearing the hijab, but this time, I didn't hide it. I would leave the house without it. Over the summer, I would debate about what I should do. I wanted to be brave and courageous and represent my religion like my mom and sisters, but I was too scared to face my friends and tell them, too scared to face society again. Towards the end of summer, I concluded that the hijab is a part of me. It was my religion, my ancestors, my family. The hijab was me, so by hiding the hijab in my backpack, I was basically hiding who I am. The first day of eighth grade came, and I got ready to face my friends, to face my school, to face society, and to face the world, to tell them the truth. I got dressed, wrapped my hair up in a bun, and got the hijab out of my wardrobe. I stared at it, then carefully wrapped it around my head. Walking to the bus that morning, I came across the same place where I took off my hijab exactly a year ago. I stopped, hesitated for a moment, and watched as two girls walked ahead of me, their steps strong and firm, as if they wanted to accomplish so much and face their greatest fears. I wondered, was it time to face mine? I took a step.
We'd like to thank all of the West High students who told their stories. We're your hosts. I'm Bella.
And I'm Lily. And thanks again for tuning in.